What happens when the world of science decides to stick its busybody nose into the world of the paranormal? And then we meet a young man working at a call center late one night. When his phone rings and he answers it, he believes it's just going to be another standard service call. Little does he know that this phone call is about to thrust him headfirst into the realm of eternal darkness. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Garbiner. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys have some awesome plans for the weekend. I don't have any plans for the weekend, but I will say I kind of know I bought a jar of peanut butter today. I don't know why I thought that was a good idea. I ate a bunch of peanut butter. Basically a living version of Pooh Bear. I ate a bunch of peanut butter and now my tummy hurts. I don't know if I've ever told you the story of when I thought, one of the many times I thought I was dying. But before we get started on that, I think it'll be a good way to start off Friday's episode. Coming on into Dead Rabbit Radio Command, everyone get on your feet and give it up for Michael R. Woohoo! Yeah! Wee! Yay! Woohoo! Coming on in. He's wheeling in jars of peanut butter. Oh, man. Michael R. joined the YouTube memberships recently. So, Michael, this is for you. You're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially, I totally understand. Through the Patreon or YouTube memberships or PayPal donations, whatever. I get it. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. And what a better way to start off a paranormal show than to talk about a time I made a series of bad decisions. Michael R., let's go ahead and get this started. I'm going to toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. Let's leave behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Why don't you drive us all the way out to my grandma's house? I'll keep this short because this really has nothing to do with ghosts. It's just peanut butter reminded me of this. And whenever I tell this story in person, people tend to like it. People tend to laugh at my misery. But we have talked about my grandma's house in the past. I've had some paranormal encounters there. That's where I was seeing the blue boy. That's not where I initially saw him, but he was following me there. That's the first time I saw Shadow Man was in my grandma's backyard. I'll put those episodes in the show notes. My grandma's house was definitely charged with something. But on this particular day, I was super broke. I was super, super broke. I think this started when I made a series of bad decisions at my apartment and ended up at grandma's house. But anyway, so what happened was I didn't have a lot of money. But I did happen to have a giant bag of peanuts that I had bought who knows how long ago. A big bag of peanuts. And me and Josh, one day, my old buddy Josh from Sacramento, we went to the Jelly Belly factory. And when you go to the Jelly Belly, you're like, people are already like, oh man, I know where this story's going. You go to the Jelly Belly factory in California, you can buy bags. Buy it by the pound of Jelly Flops. These are Jelly Bellies that didn't pass the muster, right? They were like deformed or the color didn't come out right or whatever. So you're basically buying a bag of defects. They were just as tasty. They weren't rotten or anything like that. But you'd buy these big bag of Belly Flops. So I had like a 5-pound bag of jelly beans and probably a 2-pound bag of peanuts that I'd been sitting on for the longest time. They made very comfortable seats. I ran out of food and I was like, well, you know, I don't have any money to eat anything, but I do have food in my house. I have 2 pounds of peanuts, 5 pounds of jelly beans. Okay. So that's what I ate. Eating a handful of jelly beans. Then, oh, you know what? Let's add a little bit of salty goodness to this. Eat a couple handful of peanuts. Oh, yeah, man, this is so good. And living the life. Eating jelly beans, eating peanuts. Well, I did this for probably about 3 days, maybe a little bit longer. And I started not to feel good. I go, oh man, my stomach. I don't feel good. I don't know what's going on. It didn't dawn on me that it basically made cement in my guts. I go, oh man, what's wrong with my stomach? It wasn't like I felt ill. It was pain. It was internal pain. It wasn't like I just was like, oh, I have a tummy ache. No, I hurt really bad. But I didn't want to go to the doctor. I mean, if I had money for the doctor, I would have had money for food. I went to grandma's house, because who can heal you all the time, grandma? And I didn't know what was wrong with me. I was like, oh, grandma, my stomach. And I'm a big crybaby, too. So, I mean, the problem is that when you cry all the time about how sick you are, when you have internal organ damage, they're like, I don't know if that's this or if it's just that you have a tummy ache because you're always complaining about your tummy. Oh, grandma, my stomach hurts so bad. Oh, and she's like, well, why don't you just kind of hang out for a bit? Oh, grandma. Oh. And this was kind of the peak of it. I was at my grandma's house for maybe 2 days. Oh, my stomach. And I realized I was starting to put two and two together. Like I put the peanuts and the jelly beans together in my tummy. Started to realize a couple different things. One, I hadn't gone to the bathroom in probably about the same amount of time. Probably been 3 days since I had gone to the bathroom. I remember laying on my grandma's couch in intense pain. But my body's like, okay, dude, we're going to try to, like, through the pain signals, the brain's going to try to think for you, buddy, because you're missing some clues. One, you haven't gone to the bathroom in a couple days, which is unusual for me. I'd argue unusual for most people. You ate peanuts and jelly beans. That's all you ate for days. And you created this sludge. This, basically, if you wanted to create something, it was a total lack of moisture. I can't think of any two things that you'd want to put together more. They go, dude, you have in your intestines a long, and possibly you might have to go get surgery, long, hard obstruction in your body. Now, you have to get rid of this. You have to push it out. I remember, like, thinking, it's not going anywhere. And I could feel it. So this is the thing. I would say I had a stomach ache. Better term, I should have went to my grandma and go, I have an intestine ache. Because at that point, she would have been like, oh, soup's not going to help you if your intestines hurt. For the next few hours, I was rolling around on my grandma's couch. I remember this very vividly. I remember everyone being like, I'm sorry, bro. We're going to be in the other room watching television as you whine and complain and possibly die here. I remember I could feel it move through my body. Now, you may go, Jason, intestines don't have any nerve endings. I don't know if they do or don't. All I do know is that if you want to replicate this experiment, go nuts, literally, and then go jelly beans. I could feel the pain moving through my body. I remember going, oh, I will never, ever make that mistake again. Now, to be fair, it was a very circumstantial mistake. How often do you have nothing but jelly beans and peanuts in your house? But I remember after the pain was gone, I made cement in my body and I got rid of it. Luckily, I'm not saying to this day, I'm still in intense pain. Ah, I have to edit out my screams of pain. But yeah, so let there be a cautionary tale. Let there be a cautionary tale. If you ever become broke and you only have peanuts and jelly beans, don't combine them. Do not combine them. Unless you want a couple reasons to call in sick to work for the next few days. But in that case, I'd just say lie instead of possibly creating a blockage in your body. Michael R., let's go ahead and toss. He's like, what? That's gross. Why did I drive us here? Just hear you moan and wail on the couch. Michael R., let's go ahead and toss you the hair hang glider. We'll jump off my grandma's house. Glide us all the way out, too. The bedroom. She just turned around back at my grandma's house. I was like, oh, I remember one day I was in my bedroom. I had a poop really bad. No, this is a really weird story. We're gliding out to a bedroom. Maybe your bedroom. Maybe you've experienced this. This is one of those crazy paranormal stories I talk about on this show that people do not know how to classify it, so it is not getting reported in the paranormal media. Because what is this? This is really cool. I was surprised at how much info, that might be the wrong word, how much, let's just get into it. There's a woman, let's call her Sally. She's sleeping in bed. And she wakes up. Not in the middle of the night. Not when it's super spooky. It's actually daylight outside. It's 6 in the morning. Birds are chirping. sun is rising. She wakes up and she goes, oh man, what a good night's sleep. Oh man. She opens her eyes and she sees on the walls of her room, from top to bottom, words. Glowing green words. God, what did, I can see words. These words are in English, but is it, what? And you'd rub your eyes. You try to figure out what's going on, and you're kind of looking around your room, and it looks like word salad. You just kind of look, and you're like, I must still be asleep, and you're kind of squinting your eyes, and you look. And it's gone. Hypnagogic hallucination, you'd say, right? We'll get into that in a second, but let's take a closer look at this phenomenon. This happens a lot. I actually don't remember how I came across this story. I'm kind of wondering if I got it from Sustained Disgust's iceberg. He made a really awesome iceberg. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm giving credit on the off chance that he might have found that. I might have stumbled across it. I don't remember. But if you type in to Google or any search engine of your choice, something like glowing letters, glowing numbers on my wall, you will be shocked at the amount of people asking what they saw when they woke up. Post after post, forum after forum, message board after message board. I woke up the other day and I saw green glowing letters. What does this mean? I was surprised how many people were asking the same question. And what would happen was someone would ask that question, and then you'd have 10 replies to it going, I saw that too. I didn't know what that was. I thought it was just me. What is this? So many people are seeing this, and it's, you don't go to the ghost forum because it doesn't involve ghosts. You don't go to the alien forums because it doesn't involve aliens. This is one of those paranormal high strangeness things I've talked about that we can't classify. So people don't know where to talk about it, so they end up talking to each other, and they're all going, what was that? Sometimes these are words. Sometimes they're just random letters. Sometimes they seem to be written in some sort of beautiful pattern. And sometimes it's completely illegible. Sometimes it's a completely different language. People have said they've woken up, and they said that it looked similar, but not exactly like Norse runes. Similar, but not exactly like Arabic. But it seemed to be a language of some sort. You could obviously tell through spaces in, if you didn't understand what the words were, you could sense out by the spacing between the letters, possibly even punctuation, that this is a language. It's not just a bunch of random runes. This appears to be some sort of language. Sometimes you'll wake up and you'll see it on one wall. Sometimes you'll wake up, you'll see it on all four walls. Sometimes people see it coating everything in the room. The dresser, the chair, the closet door, completely covered in this glowing script. The glowing script is the big unifier. A lot of people say it's glowing green. Some people say it's orange. Some people say it's white that they've seen. The thing that kind of kicks it out of being a hypnagogic hallucination is that there's quite a few things. People say, I wake up and I see this, and immediately I think I'm still dreaming. I'll open and close my eyes a couple times. It's still there. Then it will slowly fade away. It doesn't just really blink out. There's this slow fade. Some people, though, can see it for up to 10 minutes. And there is a report of a couple who woke up and saw the same lettering at the same time, which would completely destroy the hypnagogic hallucination argument. They could see the same lettering at the same time, and it was visible to both of them for 10 minutes. The other thing that we know about this phenomenon, which really is not much, is that people who tend to see it, they'll see it more than once. what in the world is this? I think the easy answer is hypnagogic hallucination. But that is thrown right out the window if you have two people observing it at the same time. Two people can't have a hallucination like that at the same time, especially if it's a dream-based hallucination, because two people scientifically cannot have the same dream. They could both go to a race car event and both dream about race cars, but they're not going to be the same dream. If they have a shared dream that defies science, that is supernatural. Two people cannot hallucinate the same thing. That becomes supernatural. So what is this? I was very fascinated by this phenomenon. I can't say that I've ever heard of it before. I know that glowing lettering has played parts in stories we've talked about before. Generally, and it's off the top of my head, I couldn't speak to a particular case, but if we come across something like this, it's in relation to another event, as in someone's on board a UFO and the aliens are projecting messages with a glowing script type of thing. So it's not even the same setup where they're waking up. This is one of those, I hate to keep saying this, but this is why I love doing this show and I love sharing it with you and I love finding this stuff. And again, sustained disgust may have actually pointed me in the right direction. I'm not for sure, but either if he found it or I found it. This is the stuff that people are not talking about in the general paranormal world. And this could be huge. This could be huge because the thing is we have to ask ourselves, what is it? And it actually plays into a couple different things. One, you could immediately go to simulation theory. People are waking up and they're seeing that the code is broken down. They might even be seeing the programming. Now, that part of that is because it's green and it's glowing and the Matrix is green and it's glowing. But it's almost like that is how our old computer, you know, I grew up with green screens and yellow screens and all that stuff, error messages. There was one person who said they were able to decipher what it said, and it said, open your eyes. So now we have another thing that could it be somewhat, I'm not a huge fan of simulation theory, but I'll definitely talk about it. I'm not going to poo-poo it and say I'm not going to talk about it because I don't believe it's real personally. I think it's fascinating. I think it's fascinating theory. I just don't give it much credence, but I love still talking about this stuff. That would seem like someone on the outside of the simulation is trying to contact this person. So that's because it seems so built into the environment and that some people are able to perceive it, it does. And it's interesting because once you see it once, you tend to see it more often, that something is off with their view of the world. I also wonder, I just thought of this, is the writing on the wall before they wake up? Is it just on the wall? Has it been on the wall for 5 minutes before they even open their eyes? It's just glowing there. I'd be very curious to hear if you wake up and you see this glowing text and then someone opens your bedroom door and walks in, what do they see? Because we don't have any experiences like that. All the ones I found, and again, type that into Google. Obviously, I'm going to have examples in the show notes. If you don't want to type it into Google, you can click on the links, but you'll see all the people talking about this. And most of them are saying, I thought I was the only one. Because nobody's talking about this. But those are the type of experiences that I'm curious about. Like, now that we think that this is a phenomenon, so many reports of it, what happens if somebody comes in while you're hallucinating the letters? Do the letters immediately disappear? Can you imagine how... I mean, listen. This could just be a hallucination, and I'm totally off base. I think the two people having it at the same time kind of throws the hallucination thing out the window, but if a person walks into the room and you're hallucinating and they see the hallucination, then obviously it's real. If somebody else walks in and the hallucination completely disappears, then you could argue that the person who was seen in the first place was hallucinating. But if the person who wakes up and is seeing the lettering, the green lettering covering the wall, another person walks into the room, and the person who sees the writing still sees it, and they go, hey, can you, what's wrong with my wall? I want to get my security deposit back. Look at all this stuff on the wall. What happened? You think the landlords are going to kick us out if the wall is glowing green? And the friend who walks in goes, what are you talking about? These walls look totally normal. No, there's writing all over. Don't put your hand there. I don't know what you're touching. If the person continues to see these letters, these words, runes, whatever, and the person who just came in the room doesn't, then that would go towards a completely unknown psychic ability. We don't have any way to quantify this. If one person can see a ghost and talk to ghosts and another person can't, we call the person who can talk to ghosts a medium. If one person has been abducted by an alien and another person hasn't, we call the first person, the guy who met the aliens, either an abductee or a contactee. What is this? And what would it mean? Those other two, we go, well, this person has a special ability. They can talk to ghosts. Oh, this person has a unique experience. They met aliens or were kidnapped by aliens. If someone can see the code but doesn't understand it, and another person can't see it at all, even the person who can see the code and can't understand it has this very, very unique ability. And what I find fascinating is because nobody is talking about this except for these people sharing these experiences. If you had outside observers, researchers is what I mean, not people coming in and messing up the whole hallucination, but if you had people start to put their brain power together and start to collect, let's say this becomes more well known, and you start to have people, when they see this writing, they know what forums to go to, they know what message boards to go to, and they start saying, hey, I scribbled down a couple lines of what I saw. Because right now, everyone's just waking up and rubbing their eyes, and they're like, what in the world's going on? And they don't know what it is, and it's kind of scary. They think they're going insane. They think it's a hallucination until someone else posts something about it online, and everyone's just kind of shrugging their shoulders. But imagine if these people started jotting down notes, fragments of what they're seeing. A word here, a phrase there. They may not be able to capture all of it, but get some of it. And then you have researchers start going through this and trying to crack the code. They may go, well, it looks like Arabic. I scribbled down a couple things. This is kind of what it looked like. And someone looks at it and goes, well, that's not Arabic, but that is a language. I know that language. I can decipher this. Or all these words that are random gibberish and you can feed them into a computer or have an expert look at them and analyze them and go, well, you know, it looks like gibberish. It's actually a code. And as the researcher starts going through his notes, goes, it matches a code that we saw in Arizona back in 2023. We have this. Someone sent us this in. And it's almost like it's answering each other. Two people miles apart, hundreds of miles apart, getting a coded message that's communicating with each other. That hasn't happened. As far as we know, that hasn't happened. That's a hypothetical. But it could be. And we're not even researching it. We have no... The one person said, the message said, open your eyes. Otherwise, it's just kind of described as word salad or gibberish or something that they can't decipher. Very, very strange phenomenon. I would love to find out more about this. And I would love to see this get brought into mainstream paranormal research, which is why I wanted to cover it on the show, because I know a lot of you guys are as enthusiastic about paranormal research as I am, and we can help kind of push this forward. Weird. Super weird. I love it. I love the world of the weird. I love stumbling across stuff like that. And I was surprised how many... I don't remember how I came across. Maybe I woke up and there was green lettering in my room, told me to go to Quora. But yeah, I was shocked because I'll be honest, when I first came across this story, I go, oh, it's just a hallucination. It's hypnagogic hallucination. These happen all the time. And so once I started finding all these people having the same hallucination, it started to make me kind of doubt my first instinct And I kept digging more, and I go, this is a phenomenon. Phenomenon. So what does it mean? Phenomenon. Michael R., let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world. Famous Carpenter Copter, we are leaving behind the green glowing script. Who knows where that mystery will lead us. Fly us all the way out to Canada. I mentioned the other day I saw Civil War. I really liked it. The more I think about it, I really like it. There's no good guys or bad guys. Like, people are trying to put their political priors, saying, oh, this guy's this, and that guy's that, and this guy. But really, you don't know if the whole Civil War is for good or for evil. You just don't know. They don't ever tell you who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Everybody commits multiple war crimes, and they're all wearing the same uniform. It's really interesting. It's quite jarring. I like reading the reviews where people are like, I hate this movie. I didn't know who to root for. And I was thinking about it. If you made Star Wars, if you took the movie Star Wars, and you cut out really like three scenes, Stormtroopers killing Luke's aunt and uncle, the Death Star blowing up Alderaan, and Darth Vader torturing Princess Leia. You would have no idea who the good guys were or the bad guys were in that movie. You have a rebel faction and an empire that wants to maintain stability. And you could trust the characters who say that the empire is evil. But if you never saw them do evil in the movie, you'd have to take those characters at their word. That's what Civil War is. They talk about some stuff the president does, but you don't know if that stuff is true. And after seeing every faction in the Civil War commit multiple brutal war crimes over and over and over again, at the end of the movie, you're like, I don't know if this was a happy ending or a sad ending. It's very fascinating. It's weird. It is weird to watch a movie where you don't know who to root for. You have no idea. Again, you can come in with your political priors and go, well, that guy's supposed to be Biden. He's kind of a dummy. He has to read off a teleprompter and fakes getting mad. So that guy's Biden. Or you go, well, you know, that guy's Trump. Because they say that he disbanded the FBI. And Trump's talked about them. That's it. Those are the only real comparisons you can make. I liked it. So if you're looking for something, if you want a challenging film, I'd recommend it. I think it's pretty dope. There's some... Oh, and what's really cool about it too, I'll give it a Dead Rabbit Radio recommend, Civil War. I mean, I just saw it a couple days ago, so I'm still kind of like in that moment, but it's a horror movie. But it's not like the horrors of war type of movie. No, the jump scares are bullets. You'll be watching a really, really quiet scene. Beautiful, evocative, and then it cuts to the loudest gunshots. The sound design, top-notch in Civil War. That's why I've seen it in the theater was fantastic. It's like Squid Game, where they made the bullets, the gunshots, really, really loud, and they stood out, and they actually made you flinch, as opposed to like Expendables, where you just kind of get used to it. Civil War, they'll cut from one scene. It's a jump scare. It's a jump scare to see three characters hanging out at night, watching a battle 30 miles away, to the next second, the loudest gunshot you'll ever hear in a movie theater, and a man pinned down behind a pillar screaming for his buddies to help him out. Dead Rabbit Radio recommends Civil War. It's dope. It's very challenging. If you go in with no putting anything over the characters, you don't know who to root for. It's absolutely fascinating. Michael R. is taking us out to Canada. Specifically, we're headed out to Saskatchewan. Canada. It's August 2012. It's late at night. We're about to meet a young man. We're going to call him Chuck. Chuck is working at a call center and he does internet support. So people call up and say, hey, I can't get on the internet. What's going on? Okay, well, you know, let's check some things out. Go and unplug and then plug back in your modem. Okay, I'll try that out. Hey, it works. Oh, yeah. That's what we're here for, buddy. Have a good night. Do that 300 times a day, 300 times a day, and you got the life of a call center employee. We have Chuck working at this call center. This is late at night, so there's only one other person in the building. We're going to call this guy James. And James is sitting there, bloop, his phone. Generally, the call center, the phone don't ring. There's like a beep, but beep. Hey, yeah, this is James for ISP United. How can I help you? James is taking this call, and Chuck's just kind of sitting there. Boop. His phone beeps. Hi, this is Chuck. Thanks for calling. Can I get your name and phone number, please? Hello? The voice says on the other line. Chuck kind of pauses for a second and goes, hello? The caller then asks, is this ISP United? That's a fake company name. Don't look them up and harass them if they really exist. The caller calls up and says, is this ISP United? Chuck's like, yeah, it is. You got the right number. What can I help you with? The caller says, my name is Jorge Vargas, and something's really wrong here. I'm at home, and my internet's down, and none of my electronics are working. Nothing's turning on. I don't know. Okay, Chuck thinks, you know, it's probably a power outage if nothing's working. Jorge, can I get your phone number? Yeah, sure. And Jorge gives Chuck the phone number, and Chuck's typing it into his customer database, and they don't have a customer named Jorge Vargas. In fact, the area code Jorge is calling from is not an area that this call center normally services. They're really calling the wrong call center all around. And Chuck is, you know, like, you might get this type of stuff. I've worked in call centers in the past. You get stuff like this, and you can't just hang up on the guy, right? Everything's recorded. Everything's timed. So you do want to get things done in a certain manner quickly. Well, Chuck's talking to Jorge, and, you know, he's seeing all this. He's not a customer. He's not in an area that ISP United even services. Chuck goes, you said that the all the electricity, none of your devices work, the internet's out. So what exactly is going on? Like, is there a power out? Like, what could be causing all of this stuff? And Jorge goes, no, I don't know. I mean, I know I could probably reset my modem, but I don't even know where the modem's at in here. But I mean, if it's in another room, I can't go there. Chuck's like, what? What do you mean you can't go there? And Jorge goes, well, I can't leave my room. I can't leave my room. It's dark in here, but, you know, I can kind of see where the stuff's out. The light's off, but I'm not in pitch blackness. But I can't open the door. Now, like I said, when you're working a call center, you get timed and your calls are recorded. They're randomly recorded, but you always just assume you're being recorded. It's a timed job. You have 2 to 5 minutes, generally, most calls to be done by that time. But Chuck's definitely intrigued by what's going on. This is an odd situation. And when Jorge says, I can't open my door, it's possible Chuck thought there could be some sort of threat there. What do you mean you can't open your door, Jorge? It won't open. I can't get it open. I did open it once. But when I opened it, I looked out and there's nothing but pitch black. There's nothing but pitch blackness out there. So I shut the door and haven't been able to open it since. Chuck is now kind of realizing that the line is staticky. And I don't know if it was always that way, and he's just now picking up on it, or if the line's becoming more staticky the longer this call goes on. But Jorge Vargas, not a customer, phone number not in their system. He types in the area code for the phone number. It's Texas. Jorge's on the line with Chuck, and he goes, hey, do you know where my family is? Chuck's kind of silent. This is more than a customer service call. This might be a mental health call. Jorge asks, do you know where my family is? Chuck goes, hey, Jorge, where do you live? What city do you live in? I live in Texas City, Texas. Chuck goes, hey, Jorge, I have a security question here. What's the date? What date is it? And Jorge goes, November 2011? And at this point, James's call has already ended, and he's looking over at Chuck, and he's kind of like shrugging his shoulders. He's like, what? That's not a security question. And Chuck's like kind of waving him off like, James is sitting close enough to hear this call. Chuck asks Jorge, when did your internet stop working? And Jorge says, well, I think someone unplugged something. Someone came into my house. Everything went dark. Nothing is working. And then... line goes dead. Chuck turns to James and goes, dude, that was a weird call. Like, I don't know what was going on at that guy's house. He was saying he couldn't leave his room. And then he said nothing was working, like the power was out, and then he couldn't leave his room, and then it was pitch blackness, and I don't know what that was. I don't know if he was, like, having a mental health thing. He asked me where his family was. Like, I don't know if it was a mental health thing or... weird. That was super weird. And James goes, hey, dude, write down that ticket number on that call. Because tomorrow when we come in, so you can follow up on it. And really what was meant by that was that the next day, when Chuck came in, he could follow up on it. He went to a supervisor and he said, hey, I was wondering if you could pull up a call for me, a recording of one of our calls that we got last night. It was really weird. I don't know, like, what was going on with the guy. Something seemed off. I'm kind of worried about him. I got the city he lives in, his name, his phone number. So, like, if we have to, like, call the police or anything like that, I'm sure we can do that. Supervisor's like, yeah, let's check it out. She leaves. And then she comes back to Chuck and she goes, hey, dude, I pulled up that number. I pulled up that call you gave me with that ticket number. There is no Jorge. He's like, what? She goes, I listened to the call. It's just you talking to static. There's no one on the other line, Chuck. Chuck is, now Chuck thinks he has the mental health issue. Chuck knows he took this phone call. He knows it was thing. Plus, how did he get this information? Jorge Vargas, phone number, city. How did he get this information? It was just, he ends up Googling Jorge Vargas, Texas. And he finds a news article. November 2011. In the town of Texas City, Texas. On the 700 block of Amburn. Jorge Vargas, 33 years old, was at home with his family when two men broke into the home believing that Jorge Vargas had drugs on him. It was a home invasion robbery to steal these drugs. It went horribly wrong when the two gunmen murdered Jorge Vargas, murdered his 15-year-old daughter Miranda, and while they attempted to kill Jorge's son, who was unnamed in the news articles, he made it out alive, but he watched his dad and his sister die at the hands of these two gunmen. Now, I found this story. It was posted on the X board. It's anonymous. Very, very interesting. Because the true crime part of it is true. When the Anon posted this on the X board, they posted their write-up, and then they included a screenshot of a news website talking about the home invasion murder. And I went and I typed in Jorge Vargas, Texas. And all of these articles popped up. It looks like both men got life in prison for their sentence. The murder did happen November 2011. The son did escape. So the murder part, unfortunately, we know is true. This is one of those stories, though, where you could go, well, Jason, it's an anonymous story online. Someone could have totally made it up. And that's true. If someone could be standing right in front of you telling you a story, it could be made up. But let's, you know, assume that it's true. Because we don't have proof either way. I mean, if you don't believe in ghosts, well, then there's your proof that it doesn't exist. But as far as a ghost story goes, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. If you look at the news articles, too, it'll tell you exactly where the murder took place. I mean, there are photos of this house. The murders took place. There are photos of this house. If you live in Texas City, Texas, I'm not saying to go and swing by, but it's crazy how many photos are there of this house in the news. It was on the 700 block of Amburn, November 21st, 2011. So, is that ghost still there? Is Jorge Vargas still there? That's a question. That's a question that if you live in Texas City, you can go check out. Again, not advising it, but I think I have. Again, like, this is such an interesting story because it combines ghosts and technology. It involves ghosts using the telephone. Now, that actually is not super uncommon. We do have ghosts modifying or playing around with electricity quite often. It could be something like flipping a light switch off, turning the television on, things like that. They do seem to interact with devices. There's a whole host of stories. I don't think we've covered. I think I have like a bunch of stories here on my computer about ghost phones are probably some criminal thing to hide your ghost from the FBI, but phone ghosts, like people getting phone calls from people who had died. So it's not super uncommon. It's not super common either. But you can write a book on ghosts interacting with technology to send a message. I actually think I have a book like that around here called Sinister Messages or something like that. But it's not just that. It's not just the ghost interacting with the technology. It's not just the ghost that may still inhabit that house. And I will talk about it. I got so much to say, and I am trying to sort my ideas out. Not just the ghost and the technology. It's not just the haunting. It's this idea that he called Chuck and talked to Chuck and gave Chuck information that he didn't have otherwise. The question is, why Chuck? How many people would have gotten that phone call and only heard static? How many people would have said, hello, this is ISP United. Hello? Hello, is anyone there? This is ISP United, can I help you? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and disconnect now. If you would like to have service once again, go ahead and give us a call at... Okay. Have a great day. Click. Wouldn't have even thought about it. Just be a weird... It wouldn't even be weird. We'd get calls like that at call centers, right? Someone butt dials you or someone calls you or they call the wrong number or something like that, and they don't say anything, and we do have a script for that. There were scripts for everything. It was the most soul-crushing job I ever had. I've worked a lot of different jobs. Some people love call centers. I'm not knocking call centers, except that it destroyed my soul. Made some good friends there. Made some really good friends there. Lifelong friends there. But how many people would have just heard static? Heard nothing. And then you wouldn't go and be like, dude, you won't believe what happened today. Oh my God, I'm going to have my supervisor pull this up. I got a phone call the other night. No one was on the other line. I waited like 45 seconds and no one picked up, dude. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to sleep tonight. No, you wouldn't even think about it. But Chuck heard it. And Chuck didn't just hear it, he conversed with it, and he got new information from it. A name, a phone number, a city. Makes you wonder. Not like, oh man, I just hung up on a call about 10 minutes ago. No one was on the other line. Was that Grandmama? No! I'm not saying that every time your phone rings and no one's on the other line, it was a ghost. But sometimes, it might be. But once in a million, it could be. You just hang up. You don't even think of anything about it. But that's all fascinating to me. Why did Chuck hear it that night? It had been almost a year later. It wasn't on the day he died or anything like that. November 2011 to August 2012. Why Chuck? Why then? But, you know, we're really just touching a cow and calling it a couch. Really, the main thing we should be talking about here is this dude's death. Like, not the unfortunate, you know, murder, but he's killed. He still thinks it's November 2011. I just did a speech at the Oregon Ghost Conference about how ghosts perceive time. Well, that's one I probably should have took to the conference. That's a big one. Time has not moved for him. It's been almost a year, but he thinks it's November 2011. He's in his room, or a room. We don't know if it's his bedroom or the living room or what. The article went into some detail about how the family was murdered. It was pretty brutal. I'm sparing you guys some of the details, but suffice to say, a young man saw his dad and his sister get murdered. He's in a room with all the electricity out. None of the devices are working, which may even include the light bulb. That's kind of how I pictured it, and that was kind of a picture that I painted. But television doesn't work, computer doesn't work, internet doesn't work, and whatever other devices, cell phones, anything like that, it just does not work in this room. Possibly in a dark room with the light off, but he's trapped. Because first the door wouldn't open, he couldn't get it open. And then he tried opening it again, and he just saw endless darkness outside this room. And so he shut the door, and he can't get it opened again. And he's in this room. He doesn't know where his family is. He doesn't know anything that's going on. He said some guys came into my house and he thinks they knocked out his internet. No, they murdered him. And this, as far as we know, at least in the time length of this call, November 2011 to August 2012, is his only existence. He's trapped. And he may still be trapped in this room. To this day, this house may still be haunted. What I find, we got to wrap it up. I could keep going on and on, but there is this theory. I don't think it's ever been proven because it's something that you can't prove. But I have heard over my decades of enjoying paranormal research and reading all these books and magazines and watching these shows. But there's no way to prove this. There's no way to prove this because I don't know even how this got started. But you are given the opportunity to walk into the light. Now, that part of it, we have had people have near-death experiences and they've wanted to go into the light. And relatives or loved ones who have passed away before say, no, 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 it's not your time. Don't go into the light. You need to go back to Earth and keep on living. So that, we've heard that a lot from people who have had near-death experiences. But the second part is something we don't know, which is, if you die and that beam of light appears, that tunnel of light, and you choose not to go, that's it. You have 0 second chances. you step into the light when it is your time and you go into the afterlife, or you choose to stay, that tunnel never reopens. See, we have no proof of that. Because that would require, that's not a near-death experience, that's a death experience. But I've heard that. Some of it's in pop culture, some of it is theory, because we don't know. Some of it could be from mediums contacting spirits, but we don't know that for sure. That if you choose not to walk into the light when it is offered to you, it never reappears. And now you are a ghost trapped on Earth for however long it takes for you to just kind of dissipate. Which, as far as we know, can be upwards to 400 or 500 years. I covered that story about the Roman ghosts. I'll put that in the show notes. It still blows my mind that there could be phantoms out there. That might be a more passive type of haunting than the trapped souls. But again, we don't know. There's so much stuff we don't know about this. But that's, I mean, it's, listen, there's a big difference between stepping into a tunnel of light and stepping into the vast, empty darkness outside of your room. One is very inviting. One we've seen in television and in movies for so many years that if you did die and you saw that, you would go, well, I got pretty good. This place has a pretty good Rotten Tomato score. I've heard a lot of good things about this tunnel of light. And then you go flying up to it. As opposed to, you know, the abyss. Staring into the maw of the abyss. Not a lot of TripAdvisor reports on that one. But it could be the same thing. When he opened that door, Jorge, that was his moment to make that choice, to step into oblivion, wherever that would take him. But that terrified him, rightfully so. I'm not calling the guy a chicken, but it terrified him. And so he shut the door and remained in his room. But that may have been his only chance to escape. He may still be standing there in this room, still believing it's November 2011. Still trying to figure out why nothing works in this room. Still befuddled by the fact that the door won't open and he can't leave. But worst of all, he's in this room and he's wondering, where is his family? And as long as his soul is trapped, he'll never know that answer. He'll just worry and wonder and wait for a release that may never, ever come. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day. I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great weekend, guys.